Now the veil has collapsed with the war in Ukraine, and they are openly speaking of a militarized Europe who has to prepare to defend itself, they say, but as a matter of fact, to offend or attack Russia. This is what they are saying, which is extremely dangerous and, in my opinion, also quite stupid.
Now, there are those, including some of the lawmakers in the European Parliament, they claim that the EU simply doesn't want peace with Russia.
The EU is prisoner of its own narrative. So now it is 3 years that they have built up a huge machinery promoting the narrative of anti-Russian whatever action, depicting the Russians as monsters, and also cutting all relations with Russia as they have done. So it is a bit difficult for them now to reverse this narrative. So they are prisoners of their own stupidity. There is no other way of describing it, because they are not making the interest of European nations and people a part of the fact that they are antagonizing Russia to a level that it may become very dangerous. There is a sort of hysteria. Look at the recent event of some drones that passed the airspace of Poland. I mean, this has been taken as a sort of an attack of Russia on NATO countries. I mean, it's a delirium. It's not a reasonable way of conducting foreign policy, or even less security or other similar things.
Some analysts have said previously that the EU was built on cheap Russian gas imports, that the whole thing was built basically on cheap Russian energy. And von der Leyen, a couple of years ago in her State of the Union address, she wrote off Russia, saying that it couldn't get parts for things, that the economy was in ruins. She hasn't said that this time round at the 2025 State of the Union address. Are you surprised by that?
No, it wasn't at all. I mean, this was the sort of a dream that they have been believing in, and
Like wishful thinking.
totally. And what they do not say is that their policies of antagonizing Russia, cutting ties and imports and so on, this has damaged enormously European economy and societies, and it will go on for at least a decade in this way. Even if tomorrow there will be a peace agreement, the cost of the peace agreement will be incredibly huge on the European countries and people. And of this, they don't say a word. So this is irresponsible.
Of course, we do have a cost of living crisis in the EU. Some people directly link it to cutting off Russia's cheap gas, which has pushed up the price of everything, inflation and so on. But do you think the likes of Ursula von der Leyen and other EU leaders, do you think they feel immune from this, that they're not living in the real world, so to speak, because they have big salaries?
They have big salaries. They don't really care. She mentioned something about fighting poverty in Europe in her speech, but again, these are those words that are easily said without anything behind. So, no, I think that the direction the European Union leadership has taken is a disgrace for Europe. And it will probably be the cause of the destruction of the European project.
When do you think the destruction of the European project could happen, potentially?
This I don't know. I would say that already now, the I would say the decrease of support to the European Union institutions from the population all over the European countries is quite visible. If things get tough with increasing prices, for instance, next winter, and political crisis attached to the migration issues, this can derail completely the project.
Does that mean like the rise of the far right, the anti-EU politicians within the European countries, within the EU countries?
Definitely, the far right is an expression of the unhappiness of people about the national and European leaders. But there is not only that, there is a return also the extreme left. Look at France. I mean, it's quite evident. And so you have a polarization of the sentiment of people, but this is the result of a serious number of repeated mistakes by European Union leaders and their national member states.
Can I ask you about the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal? Because, of course, it was seen as one of the EU's biggest success stories in terms of foreign policy successes, but it's now in ruins because Trump pulled out of it in his first term, of course. Is there any hope for the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal or maybe a new deal?
I would say no. There is no hope, and certainly the approach that the E3 has had towards Iran, continuing the sanction approach, doesn't help at all. And with what is the standing of the Israeli government and the actions that the Israeli government is doing, I think, at what they did in Doha a few days ago, this doesn't make me think anything good for the near future, also for Iran.
And in terms of the Israel attacks on sovereign soil in Iran and the murdering of senior officials and civilians and the United States doing it also, attacks on Iran, it doesn't bode well for the future. It doesn't show a very positive sign, does it, in terms of diplomacy?
No, it is. That has been a terrible action by so-called democracies. No, the narrative here, at least, is so strong about democracies versus autocracies. And so democracies are the good guys, but then they go around bombing without any restraint. And this is what they have done in Iran. But even before the bombing conducted by the United States, the killings conducted by Israel inside Iran, isn't this a violation of sovereignty? I mean, where is the von der Leyen on this? She doesn't say a word.
Is Israel guiding U.S. foreign policy in this regard?
To a certain extent, well, guiding is maybe too much, but certainly it has a power of steering it at its own interests and pleasure. And the United States have tried to react to moderate somehow this capacity of Israel, but they failed, and we have seen it in Doha, where they, if they were not involved in the process of the attack, at least they didn't say no.
Is there an argument that, you know, at least Trump, for all his failings, he's straight up about things, he doesn't keep talking about rule of law and international law and so on, yet we have EU leaders who are constantly talking about such things, and yet there appears to be double standards. Are there double standards when it comes to all of this?
EU is just propagating a rhetoric, saying that this is the golden garden of the world with rules and rights and this and that, and that they want to export this concept as a value in international affairs. This is what they say. I mean, this is pipe dream type of politics. I mean, what is it? And it will be a long decade of decline for Europe.
And what about rule of law issues within the EU itself and divisions within the EU based on that?
I think we have to admit that, again, rule of law is a nice and cheap rhetorical way of presenting Europe, but the reality on the ground in the states of Europe is that the rule of law is it is in decline, but not from now. It's at least a decade, if not more.
Can I ask about the EU-US relations generally? Because, you know, they had the trade deal, if you want to call it that, or the basically the agreement on the tariffs, the flat rate of tariffs, which is much higher than had been previously, 15% flat rate. Was it a very bad deal for the EU?
they couldn't do anything else than this. As I said before, Europe was defeated, European powers disappeared, they've been partially occupied and they still are occupied. They're a dependency.
When
of
you say
the US.
Occupied, you're referring to the NATO base, or you're working
not NATO,
to the
US.
US bases, yeah.
Yeah, US bases and nuclear armaments. We host nuclear armaments, which is not under our national controls, nor the EU. It's US. So that's the evidence of a colony. And this is what we are. And so the idea that we can have independence or autonomy and this and that, this is just another pipe dream from politics. I mean, this is not reality. The reality is that the US doesn't move out of Europe. They are still here. They want to stay here. Why? Because it's the richest place in the world. And why should they give it up? So they, on the contrary, they squeeze it. And it's not because of Trump. This is the mistake that most media make, because they see in Trump the bad guy from the US who is trying to hurt European interests. Oh, no, no. You can go back to the Nobel Prize Obama when he was proposing the TTIP agreement, which we refused democratically, but they are imposing it now by force. The sanctions and the tariffs and all this. What is it? It's the imposition of the TTIP framework by other means.
So just to elaborate a little bit, you're saying the EU had no choice but to agree to the tariffs, Trump's tariffs. Why do you say that?
I mean, our entire economic system, particularly the financial one, is in the hands of the US. UK, which thinks to be on the moon probably, didn't realize that all the banks in the city are American, are no more British. So if the United States controls those financial institutions, what autonomy you can have? Zero. And through the city, they control the rest of the continent. So now they are also showing up in deals, banking deals across Europe, in Italy and Germany especially. Major players like BlackRock, by the way, the Chancellor of Germany has been working for BlackRock for over 10 years, so it's another sign on who he is. In Italy, JP Morgan and so on. So they are coming in and they will take control, and they have the means and the tools to do it, of the banking of Europe. Once they've done this, they just have to press the button and squeeze it. So what autonomy can have a policy when you don't control your financial sector, your military sector, your trade is dependent on the US, basically, so we have to accept better to lose something but to continue trading. This is the situation. And this is a situation that derives from the historical reasons of the Second World War, surely, but also by the incapacity of the Europeans to do anything in over the past 8 years. What they did, they've been waiting.
Can I ask you as well about the issue of the EU asylum system? Because, you know, von der Leyen in her address of State of the Union mentioned about migration. It's a big issue here. But like, if you're from Ukraine, you get the same rights as an EU citizen under the emergency mechanism. But if you're from an African country or from the Middle East, you could be sleeping in a tent. Are there double standards as well when it comes to this issue?
Definitely. European culture is basically racist. It didn't change. And from racism came all the other disastrous policies that we have seen in the 20th century. This has never changed. Europe is not used to accept diversity, and they will never do this. So they will find all the possible ways to send back all those they consider that they are not like them. As for the Ukrainians, first of all, they're white, they're Christian, they are European in a way, at least geographically. And it was a nice way to show support against Russia, having these people coming into European countries and being somehow regularized, more or less. But apart of this, they do nothing. The concept of asylum that was so important in the 20th century in Europe has disappeared totally.
So, like, when they talk about, you know, rule of law and humanitarian support and asylum for refugees and so on, that's a load of rubbish as well, basically, is it?
It's empty words. Empty words. They do not manage even to protect internal rights in the Union, so to European citizens, social rights are very poorly protected, if not obstaculated. So I don't know what they're talking about. Frankly speaking, it seems to me that, like, if they come from outer space and they spend a lot of money in propaganda, paid propaganda through the media, to convince people that Europe is fantastic and because of Europe everything is nice. It doesn't seem to me the case. I mean, and sooner rather than later, the reaction, the popular reaction will be visible.
When you say sooner rather than later, you're not willing to give a time frame on that? Like, I mean, is there a tipping point for that situation?
I think that we are reaching it slowly and constantly. The impoverishment level of especially the low middle class has largely increased. And it's not even necessary to go in the statistics. You just go around in the cities and in front of the charitable restaurants or places like this for food and clothing. And you see the number of people, and they're not immigrants. They are white Europeans. They cannot afford anymore. And what is the European Union thinking to do on this? Nothing. Let's spend a huge budget in armaments. What people would eat? Bullets?
In realistic terms, what would the collapse of the EU look like? Would it be like going back to the way it was before, individual countries, individual currencies, individual policies? Like, what would that look like?
It wouldn't be in the interest of the United States. So I doubt that this will happen in the way you said. But certainly the central authorities of the European Union, so this commission and Parliament never was a real central authority, but anyway, it was there, would be sidelined more and more and more.
Paolo Raffone, director of the SIPPI Foundation here in Brussels, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome.
Tales full of sadness and woe, but I believe you smile again. You see, I know the pain you're feeling, 'cause I was there just like you. Oh, cure the outcast. Sometimes it's better to be alone than to be with the bad crowd. Preserve your mind and feed it. Nourish what it is you have inside. Use it in the right way.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. Well, this is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be at your service. And in here, I have a very dear friend, Sister Nasreen. And I would love her to introduce herself at the very beginning of today's episode. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for inviting me here so that you could listen to my opinion, allow me to give my opinion and my ideas. I don't know what you want me to say. I'm from England and I live here. Mm-hmm. And I'm always ready to discuss Islamic issues.
Very
actually.
Good. That's all what we need in here in Muslim Lady, which is all related to the concerns of ladies from all around the world. So wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and everything is just so okay with you. So in today's world, becoming a mother and at the same time having many other stuffs in your plate is a very challenging thing, to the point that many girls and many wives would prefer not to have children at all, not to have babies, because they're busy enough doing their own jobs. Like if she has to work and once she's back home, she has to cook, she has to take care of her husband, she has to take care of house, everything.
Do we know a role of a woman? Or are we making it up according to society?
No. As a woman, like as a lady who's been spending her entire life for her education, now she's got a degree, she wants to be fruitful and be a part of the society.
Exactly.
To be an active
this
part
is
of
a
it.
Secular understanding.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
I study and I want to flourish what I've learned.
We hear what is flourishing, what is success, what is knowledge. You know, we have to go back to the origins. We're just assuming that filling our head with words from secular books is education. No, it's not. You know, it doesn't mean you're a PhD that you know anything.
Sure, I agree with that.
Okay.
Your degree is not going to add to your knowledge.
The only way, look, we're secularizing life. We are seeing Islam on one side, the path to the Zuhur, which is our mission today.
Reappearance,
right?
Actually.
Okay, so the Zuhur. Zuhur doesn't mean reappearance. Zuhur, with an abjad of 1111, means the manifestation of spirituality.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what it means, this is not from my own opinion.
So what do you suggest? Now I'm a girl.
I suggest that we go back to the Quran and let Allah guide us, not letting society and social media and our parents, who also have been conditioned for what is a... This is all women's liberation. You know, go back to the origin. What did Lady Fatima... How did Lady Zainab become Lady Zainab? We say, be like Lady Zainab. I can't be like Lady Zainab if you don't teach me how to build myself to become a Lady Zainab.
So I should be educated, and once I'm educated...
What is education?
To improve myself, to develop
myself
into a better version of myself.
Okay, but from what? If the heart, by Imam Reza's terms, is more important than the mind, why are we spending 90% of our time on the mind and we're leaving the heart because we don't have time because we're tired spending it on the mind?
Like, I'm working on my mind, as you just said, if we take education as the study and improvement of the mind. And then I work on my heart.
It's not the study and improvement of the mind. It's a filling. If you think of a computer,
mm-hmm.
The processor is the most important. The processor is the power, right? The hard drive is reading books. It doesn't make you better. It strengthens the muscle of the brain. That's it. That's it. We don't know the self. We don't know the physical body. Do you know that? The Quran is a university. It's a hadith. The Quran is a university. The Imam said, get as much as you can from Allah's university. Where did I find it? In the Quran. How long did it take me? 5 days. How? Okay, that's another program. But I can answer the questions.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. So let's go for a break and then we come back to see what's with today's Muslim lady.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Just to get an idea of my Weltanschauung, my world view. I'm half Western, half Eastern, born in London, lived in 9 different countries, 3 different states, traveled 27 countries, been to different ummahs in the world. I work on social media. I have 25 blogs at least, maybe it's more now. And growing.
And university has done nothing
and
to
I
you?
I have been to university. I have studied my master's in applied ethics.
Yeah.
And undergraduate in America. I put on hijab in America, in Florida. And I came to the understanding through Islam, the understandings that people who have PhDs in the Western secular universities and institutions haven't understood yet. How to fix mental health, for example. They're still looking into it. They can't even fix autism. Autism is very simple. It's a disconnection of the heart from the brain through the third eye. That's it.
And what is the cure for that?
What do you do for that? That's a little bit of a discussion, but it's easily fixed. It's not.
So, okay, remember that for another episode we have to talk about it. Because there are many, many Muslim ladies out there who are dealing with children
like this. They are dealing
with
it because they themselves are disconnected from their heart.
Oh, my God.
Because
now again,
they're spending their time
the
in the brain.
The cycle. Okay, yeah. So we were talking about these women who have to create this balance between among their motherhood, them being a housewife, and them also being a member of the society, actively getting engaged in whatever. Actually, what they do in society is a must. Like, they have to take that pressure on their shoulders. They have to.
Who says?
Well, the structure of the society says.
No, the structure of society doesn't dictate. Allah dictates.
Okay, if I want to go to a doctor that is a woman, that woman has to study, and then that
why
woman
do you
has
have
to
go to a doctor?
No, now you're wiping
no,
out everything.
No, I'm not. Why are we taking drugs?
So if someone is suffering from cancer,
why are
she,
they
has
suffering
to go, she has to go to a doctor.
No, she doesn't. She has to fix her vibrations. When you fix the vibrations, increase the frequency of them, the body, the cancer can't live in the body anymore. The point is, rely on Allah. And how? You go forward with your practice, you connect to the Quran, you connect to the imams.
So you think
Allah will guide you forward and will tell you, you know, will give you the satisfaction of not having to prove yourself in this dunya way. Is one of the,
so,
you know.
Just answer my question. Do you believe that there is no way for a woman to balance, like, if we consider, like what you said is a different story, but then I'm just saying that in today's world, do you think there is no way possible for a woman to make a balance between motherhood and working outside the home? Like she
no,
doesn't need to
that's
work?
Not my point. The point is, I have nothing, it's not about me anyway. It's like Islam doesn't actually have anything against a woman working outside.
So,
the point is the woman must get perspective on what is her role here to begin with, and then she will find the balance. You understand?
Yeah.
But she can't do that alone. We're trying to do everything with our nafs, but we have to rely on Allah's guidance. Guidance doesn't come from outside. It comes to the heart, and only the Quran and the Ahl al-Bayt, we need to put that in the beginning of the day, every day, in order to know. Imam Ali, I saw in the tafsir of Al-Mizan, he said, most of the believers are misguided because they're still on the level of Tawheed. Believers. So there is a problem with our perception because we haven't fed our ruh, which automatically becomes connected with the third eye because they're both fed from the same way. You understand?
Yeah.
We cannot live without the Quran. We want
sure.
to fix things by looking outwards at society. You're doing it with the questioning even, you know?
Yeah.
We can't. It's impossible. We have to always feel like we're in the sea relying on Allah. He said even for a shoelace. You know, we're trying to do everything with our nafs, you know, with our will. We're working. Our brain is telling which way we want to go. No, feed, rely, do the practices. Like, there is a specific practice. I have it on my blog. A specific routine practice that we can do. If we're doing that, you automatically release.
So first of
the
all,
burden.
I have to question myself
yeah.
about what is my goal? What
yes.
is my priority?
Yeah, but that is not, again, even questioning the priority is deception coming in. We think we're being truthful to ourselves, but the desire comes in, right?
Yeah.
And then there's already the battle.
So what should I do at the very first point?
At the very, we have to have a holistic plan, you know?
So because you now, you said that education and university is also connected to nafs.
Yeah, so.
So if I
if
see
you're
that
going to university, you still have to put the Quran first. You see? Because the Quran, it goes to your subconscious.
So that's what I think I'm doing. I think that I study because I want to help human beings, because that's what God wants from me. If we search inside and figure out the questions that we have inside and feed that thing you were just talking about, feed the urge that exists in me with the breath and with recitation, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. then I would get connected to what?
Immediately.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't be deviated from what is actually planned for me.
You wouldn't be deceived.
Yeah. So,
because remember, Shaitan is the arch deceiver. So he's going to get you at each step of the way. You can't live in alignment.
There is no problem with me pursuing my education. But the problem is if that education gets to conquer me entirely, if that becomes the goal of my life.
If it makes you a secular person.
Yeah. So I guess this is just an introduction to another episode, which I hope we would have, because still there are some more of details to talk about and to discuss. But this is all for today. I hope you have enjoyed that. Dear ladies, this was all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female, and made us into nations and tribes, so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history, just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio, broadcast from Tehran. Today is Wednesday, and here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. In total, 25 prophets are mentioned in the Holy Quran in different chapters. Prophet Moses, or Musa in Arabic, peace be upon him, is mentioned 136 times in the Holy Quran, making him the most mentioned prophet of all in the Holy Book of Allah. The literal meaning of the word Quran is "the which is being read." The word Quran is repeated 70 times in the Book of Allah itself. The month of Ramadan is the only month of the year mentioned in Quran in verse 185 of chapter Al-Baqarah, or second chapter. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. We'll start off this hour's programs with Black and White. The program covers the latest developments in Latin America and tells you what is happening in this strategically important region. After that, we have Islamic laws. The program focuses on Islamic laws and adopts a practical approach to the subject. Next up will be our varied radio productions feature again. Stay with us for this hour.
Black and White.
los instrumentos,
the instruments and tools are not the issue.
No son el problema.
The real problem lies in how they're used and who they serve.
Y al servicio de quién están. Por lo tanto, el desarrollo.
Therefore, the development of virtual means and artificial intelligence is not something to be discarded. On the contrary, it represents progress.
Todo lo contrario. Es un avance. El tema es, ¿de qué manera estas herramientas?
The key question is how these tools and scientific advancements are utilized for the benefit of humanity, rather than for a select few who exploit and oppress the majority.
Que se dedican a explotar y a oprimir a la mayoría de la humanidad. Que es el caso que está sucediendo hoy día con los medios virtuales, con la inteligencia artificial.
This is precisely what is happening today with virtual media and artificial intelligence, which are being used, at least in the collective West, to exert aggression towards Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
Asia y América Latina, para mantener a los pueblos subyugados, para seguir.
This serves to keep these nations subjugated, interfere in their internal affairs, and steal their natural resources, from copper and lithium to gold and rare earth elements. The aim is to recolonize them once again, preventing them from thinking independently and taking control of their own destinies.
El destino en sus propias manos. Ese es un tema esencial. Y eso es lo que tenemos planteado.
This is an essential issue, and it's what we're addressing on the international stage, all of us who advocate for sovereignty, independence, and the development of nations.
La lucha no es contra la ciencia, contra la técnica.
The struggle is not against science or technology, but rather how they are utilized and who benefits from them. These advancements should always serve the majority, ultimately benefiting humanity.
De la humanidad, en definitiva.
This is one of the key issues at hand. It's true that imperialists exploit those tools for wars, political conflicts, and to sway public opinion in various countries and entire regions. They use them to justify their violent and criminal interventions, such as the genocide in Gaza, and to justify fascists who masquerade as Democrats around the world. Now is the time for the people, scientists, patriots, sovereignty advocates, and social fighters, those of us who seek progress and development, to embrace and harness artificial intelligence and all scientific advancements in support of our demands.
En beneficio de nuestras demandas. No podemos dejarla en mano de los.
We cannot allow it to remain in the hands of monopolies, super exploiters and oppressors.
No le tengamos miedo a su uso.
We should not fear its use. Instead, let us also fight for our rights, combat colonization, and advocate for a mindset that prioritizes humanity above mere profit and the power of a select few.
Siempre en el centro de todo a la humanidad. No.
We are talking about the power of all. This is what the struggle for control over artificial intelligence is about today.
Eso se trata hoy día la lucha por el dominio de la inteligencia artificial. Esto es.
This is Black and White.
I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. El embuste, la manipulación.
Deception, manipulation, and misinformation have been a part of human history for nearly as long as we can remember, influencing political conflicts, wars, and much more. However, today, these issues have reached an extraordinary level. They're not only prevalent, but pursued, but overused to the point that this accumulation has given rise to a new quality. This is why it's essential to delve deeper into these matters, as they are impacting nations, particularly those striving for freedom, a new democracy, and national sovereignty. To explore these topics in depth, we're here today on Black and White with our guest from Caracas, Venezuela, Gustavo Villapol, an analyst and member of the National Assembly of Venezuela, and the author of the book Global Dictatorship of the Algorithm, Welcome Gustavo Velopol to our program Black and White on Hispan TV.
A nuestro programa Negro y Blanco.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I send a supportive hug for everything that happened during this 12-day war. A hug to all your staff. Here in Venezuela, we have a lot of affection for you. It is an honor for me to be at this station and in this multi-platform medium that is truly fighting amidst this sea of misinformation.
Muchas gracias por tu palabra, Gustavo.
Thank you so much for your kind words, Gustavo. Gustavo, why should we discuss artificial intelligence today? What role does it play in politics and warfare now?
Yes, artificial intelligence has been a concept for over 60 years. It was introduced at a conference many years ago, and since the Turing test, the idea of artificial intelligence has been discussed. However, it is clear that with the advent of the internet, and especially with the emergence of digital platforms and the major tech conglomerates that now play a crucial role in the global flow of capital, artificial intelligence has taken on a significant role in everyday life. This is particularly evident in military conflicts and psychological operations, including the creation of what are now referred to as fake news. These are simply the same lies and sensationalist news that have existed for ages, but now they are disseminated through the major technologies developed by the four or five well-known tech giants of the world, which has also evolved under current circumstances into a form of digital geopolitics, where various blocs vying for power on this planet, whether it be the NATO bloc, the BRICS bloc, or the Global South, are competing for three major things. First, the internet and all the hardware that entails, including undersea cables, satellites, and the minerals necessary for constructing this technology. Next, they are competing for narratives, for minds, for what each of us as human beings thinks while living on this planet. There are platforms like Meta, which already boasts nearly 5 billion users, indicating that their technological strategies, narrative strategies, and algorithm designs are reaching the vast majority of humans on this planet. The third and significant competition is for data, which is generated in this realm of digital geopolitics, but fundamentally, it has been the same straw since Sun Tzu from his book on war to the present day. The data is simply to defeat an enemy without firing a shot, but rather by convincing them of military superiority, cultural superiority, racial superiority, or any of the absurdities constructed throughout history. In the context of the 21st century, we are witnessing a significant example of this. We are experiencing a live genocide in Palestine. There are platforms and artificial intelligence software that illustrate how a beautiful Palestine could look without Palestinians, designed by American companies and the murderer Netanyahu. Thus, we live in a world that revolves around this issue. This is the broader context of your question, and there is a lot of intricacy and many threats to unravel in this realm of artificial intelligence that we could explore.
Gustavo, en algún momento, unos años atrás,
Gustavo, a few years back when the internet started to invade every home and location, the idea was that there was now democracy in communications, that it was democratic. However, we're really talking about a handful of companies that own all of this, which have ideological and political interests, and follow a certain chain of command. Can we truly say that the use of media at this level represents real democracy?
¿De democracia realmente? ¿Son democráticos?
Yo te voy a citar a uno de los...
I'm going to quote one of the co-founders of Facebook named Sean Parker. He is one of the most significant executives, a former vice president of the Facebook platform. He stepped away from this multi-platform saying, "We have created an algorithm and a platform that fosters addiction in the brains of humans, where every like triggers a dopamine release in the human brain." This man, who is a scientist, a data scientist, and a computer scientist, concludes his statement by saying, "Only God knows what this is doing to the brains of our children."
That's right.
According to Sean Parker, one of the co-founders and former vice president of Facebook, this gives us a glimpse into the commercial and economic intentions behind these platforms. I believe the first thing we need to demystify is Silicon Valley, which has its root in the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, the first microchip company, and was funded by the Pentagon during the Cold War, backed by the American deep state. Silicon Valley is not just a club of guys in Converse shoes, white t-shirts, and nice jeans. It is undoubtedly a significant military and economic platform for the American state, utilized first for economic purposes and then militarily, if necessary, against the rest of the world.
Let's take a short break and continue right away. Thank you. We're back with Gustavo Villapol from Caracas. Gustavo, please continue your analysis.
Por favor, continúa en tu análisis.
Sí, planteábamos que esas tecnologías que...
Yes, we suggested that the technologies primarily developed in Silicon Valley are no longer what they used to be. The so-called startups are not those charming ventures run by young people in jeans and Converse shoes with white t-shirts anymore. And instead, they have been taken over by large conglomerates listed on the stock exchanges of New York and various Western countries, particularly in the northwest of the world. These are the same companies that own Meta, the ones that control Google, the major conglomerates on the US and London stock exchanges, the ones that own Amazon, and the few Western companies that dominate the digital landscape. They are the same entities that manufacture weapons, the same ones that operate mercenary groups, and the same ones with geopolitical, military, and armed interests across the globe. They are the same companies that exploit resources in the Congo, the same ones that seek lithium in Chile, Bolivia, and Argentina. These are the same firms that will defend their interests with the same ferocity that the Five Sisters did for oil in the 20th century. First, we need to demystify the world. Without a doubt, these are extraordinary tools. From my perspective, I don't want to condemn technology, as it is remarkable from a technological standpoint. The design of algorithms is something I am passionate about. I don't want to outright condemn technology itself, but I must openly state that its foundation, including the development of its algorithm and its economic, political, and military interests, lies in the hands of few individuals who are not particularly concerned about the rest of humanity. Their main interest is to become significantly wealthier, even if it requires political and military intervention. Venezuela, Bolivia, and Mexico have around 60 books written on this topic. One of the most significant scandals involving the company CLS Strategics, which operated in both Mexico and the United States. They created thousands of fake accounts across various platforms, running bot farms dedicated to psychological sabotage and communication intervention in Mexico, Bolivia, and Venezuela. This was a plot that was uncovered in the middle of the second decade of the 21st century, during the intense battles against Venezuela, and interestingly, it received little coverage from various media outlets. It illustrates how these platforms are consistently used for the destabilization of governments, for the destabilization of countries, and even more seriously, for the transformation of humanity. As we become more aware of this reality, artificial intelligence is something extraordinary. I use it daily for research, studying, and work. However, for instance, when artificial intelligence is used to create a deep fake, it could take a video of me here and make it seem like I'm saying the exact opposite of what I'm saying right now. It would be very difficult to identify whether it's really me or not. Perhaps even my mother wouldn't notice. Therefore, there is an important alert to raise for all our Latin American communities and our peoples. I conclude with this thought. Let's not approach artificial intelligence and social media on our mobile phones with innocence. We should exercise the same caution we have towards the major international media that dominated messages in the 20th century, the same level of caution.
Así es, Gustavo. Bueno, estamos frente a una herramienta.
That's right, Gustavo. Well, we are facing a tool, and the question is how we should use it to benefit policies of sovereignty, national liberation, social justice, and a new society in the world. I remember when I was very young reading a book by Armin Matillard called Aggression from Space, which was written before the Internet. Even at that time, it was already addressing how peoples and their struggles were being attacked, how misinformation was spread, and how efforts were made to influence things in a way that favored the established order. So how should we use this tool, since you are a scholar, for the benefit of liberation?
Porque tú eres un estudioso, ¿no es cierto? Esta herramienta en beneficio de la liberación.
Sí, yo creo que hay varios niveles de solución para este, para lo que...
Yes, I believe there are multiple levels of solutions for what I see as a significant issue facing humanity in the 21st century. I think there are various levels, starting with the individual level. However, it would be misleading to say that it can only be solved on an individual basis. We need to find ways to disconnect from our phones for a few hours each day. There are different types of solutions needed to break free even from the constant monitoring of our children, etc. But this is an individual solution, and it would be a fallacy to suggest that simply doing yoga will eliminate phone-related anxiety or prevent us from encountering fake news. We live in a society that operates under this logic. So while the individual level of solution is crucial, it is also a personal decision. There's also a kind of family rebellion against these digital technologies, the culture we have within our families and in our environments. I also believe that just as we have fought against lies throughout these years of communication battles, the United States serves as a prime example of this. There are countless collectives and social movements beginning to mobilize around this reality. It's particularly interesting in the U.S. because the groups that are getting involved in this issue include former engineers and ex-programmers who once worked on these very platforms. They are the ones raising the alarm about what they themselves created. Additionally, there is another crucial level to consider, which is that of states and governments. I think organizations like CELAC, ALBA, and others that unify the peoples of the South, Latin America, and Caribbean must confront this reality head-on. We cannot remain passive in the face of this technology as we did in the 20th century, being a mere bystander. We need to face the 21st century head-on, developing our own engineers and programmers in Latin America and building our own solutions. This is crucial because the issue lies in the fact that these platforms are designed in English, lacking our cultural context, worldview, anthropology, and history. And the same old story, we are being neo-colonized through digital platforms. As states, governments, and various international associations, we have the responsibility to create our own sovereign platforms to safeguard our data and protect our minerals. As always, the minerals necessary for developing these technologies are found in our countries, in Africa, Latin America, and also in Asia, particularly the rare earth elements in China. Therefore, we must make a significant effort to raise awareness about this issue, explaining to people what a psychological operation strategy is. For instance, one that is currently widely used on social media involves utilizing a set of bots, robots that aren't like those in movies, but rather mobile phones, memory devices, or CPUs that mimic thousands of individuals who can engage in conversations, comment, and create opinion matrices on various topics ranging from purchasing a product to toppling a government. Brazil experienced this firsthand as entire bot forums transformed into individuals using WhatsApp, and through WhatsApp, a strategy was crafted that helped Jair Bolsonaro win his first term in office. Therefore, we face